Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone to From the Holodeck. All right, so today we're going to be discussing Season 4, Episode 3, titled Human Best Friend. If you're new to our show, you can find all of our shows, past, present, and in the future, pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search From the Holodeck. Be sure to give us a review and a thumbs up. We need those. Thank you. Now, today, we're going to be discussing a comedic episode, a Star Trek funny episode, and the synopsis: shore leave on a pleasure planet turns dangerous when the crew's promised escape stops being fun. The hijinks begin because the planet itself produces a natural gas that inebriates. Written by Catherine Lynn and directed by Yana Gorskaya. All right, so the episode uses the same kind of amnesia-driven comedy plot as, say, like Dude, Where's My Car, or even The Hangover, in which the characters have to reconstruct events of the previous night. And semantically speaking, it's essentially a variant of the buddy comedy. So broadly, this type of episode builds out character relationships, develops new ones, and fleshes out existing situations and characters. And I would also say broadly, because that's exactly its function. There isn't a lot of nuance in this episode, but the episode is just clever enough to give us a few meaningful moments. The form, as it was designed to function, meaning the way, the shape of the episode itself, is fine, but it forgoes the things that make Star Trek Star Trek, in my opinion, which is sophistication. So they forego sophistication for something that I would call elementary humor. 12-year-old humor, essentially.
Yeah.
And the strength of the episode really is the furthering of Spock and Kirk's friendship, which was unexpected. And that's why ultimately the episode does work for me, because you think the real narrative force is between Montgomery Scott and Ortegas. But as the episode progresses and we get to the end of the episode, we realize, oh, even though Spock and Kirk's story was essentially written as story B, it ends up being the real emotional aspect of the episode, meaning it's what we as Star Trek fans really want. These are the types of moments we want. We want to see our legacy characters, as well as our new characters, really come to understand each other. And if we're dealing with characters like Kirk and Spock, that is really what a lot of us are waiting for. We're waiting for those continuing moments, those fragmentary moments that slowly build to the relationship that we all have come to know for the past 60 plus years. So even though the episode forgoes sophistication for toilet humor or, you know, elementary humor, at least we have that bit of importance and relevance that ultimately saves the episode and brings it more to a serious place of human development and character understanding.
Yeah. The way I see this episode is like going back and watching a Lower Decks episode that me and you actually really enjoy, where Lower Decks did fantastic job with their humor in Star Trek, but it was those episodes where they blended their humor with their moments of like serious character development that you would like be at the end of the episode, you'd be like sitting back and going, holy crap, what just happened? because we were just watching a episode that shouldn't be taken seriously, especially in the setting it's in, which is Lower Decks. But you have like these really interesting moments of character development where you have we started to actually like the crew of the Cerritos, and that's how I kind of at the end of this episode, that's how I kind of saw everything kind of wrapping up, because like while the main focus seemed to be on Ortegas and Scotty, in actuality, the most important development was actually getting to see, yeah, this is the beginnings. This is the origins of why Kirk and Spock became friends in the first place. Because, like, that's always been something as an origin in Star Trek, something that's never been stated openly, is like, how does Spock, this logic machine, become friends with Kirk, who... For all intents and purposes, they shouldn't get along, but for some strange reason, they do. And in this episode, by the end of it, we begin to realize, oh yeah, this is the beginnings of the relationship. Why Spock sees, you know, Kirk as Jim, and why Kirk sees Spock as kind of like, oh, this is my favorite new toy to play with.
Yeah, no, I see that and I acknowledge that. And I think, again, that's why I say the strength of the episode is, in fact, you know, the Kirk and Spock aspects. I'm not saying the rest of the episode wasn't funny, but when it really comes down to it, that's really what we can take away in terms of long-term relevance from this episode. And you do bring up an interesting and vital point, Dave. Because if we go back to the original series days, there is no unfamiliarness between Kirk and Spock. The moment you watch the first episode, okay, I'm not talking about the pilot, there's already familiarity there. There isn't I'm going to get to know this person. Like in our other iterations of Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, most of our crew do not know each other, and they have to slowly get to know each other. And by writing that through these character interactions, we get to know these characters. So that's why when I look back on some of my potential cautionary warnings, I guess you could say, to the producers of Star Trek, when they started floating these ideas that Kirk is going to be in all of these episodes in Strange New Worlds, I had said, well, we got to be careful what we do with Kirk. But then I started thinking, we don't know anything prior to the original series, really. We know Kirk and Pike had a general knowledge of each other. Were they friends? I would say no. They seem to be changing that a little bit in the series, but I do feel like there's room for that latitude. There is latitude there to make those little changes and do some finessing. But as you mentioned, David, when it comes to Spock and Kirk themselves, episodes like this, I think, appropriately fill in the blanks. Oh, this is why they know each other so well already, because they've already built this friendship. And even using the inebriated status, okay, of Spock and Kirk to develop this, I think makes more sense. Because the two of them together, if they were in a normal state of mind, we wouldn't believe it for a moment that Kirk and Spock would bond like this. Spock would not share these types of things with Kirk. It can only be done in a way like they did in this episode. And in doing so, it kind of speeds up their friendship for us because of a scenario that they created. It allows us to go from, hey, let me get to know you, to, wow, you just told me all of your deepest secrets.
That's what I thought was like so funny, because like at first we're expected to think that the Kirk that basically Spock is seeing is a hallucination. Because like it's something that it's still connected from the mind meld that he had with Kirk, and he's like going, oh, you're a hallucination. So when you get to the end and you find out, oh no, that's really Kirk, And he basically, this whole time that they've been there, I crack up because he knows all of Spock's secrets now. Yeah. And like Kirk is all cool about it. He's like, and that's the thing that cracked me up. That's a douchebag thing to do to someone.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, why would Kirk do that? Why would he let Spock spill his...
But it works.
Then he's also inebriated. He's also inebriated. So all of it makes sense. Yeah, so I'm good with that. I don't know. There are some things I thought... were really funny. The Pike stuff with the tattoos.
Oh my god, dude.
Funny. And to see
Anson get a tattoo was hilarious.
Yeah, and to see Anson Mount, you know, yet again do something different in terms of acting just shows us, as if we needed more proof, that this guy is just a fantastic talent, that he can pretty much do whatever you throw at him. But it goes back to my own personal feelings. That I'm also not keen on these types of episodes. Ultimately, I like my serious episodes. I like my smart episodes. Let's get into this a little further. And in doing so, David, I think how I feel and why will become more clear. And there may be people that agree, David, but you may disagree. And I'm really anxious to see what you think about it. So let's start with some issues. So for me, as I had said at the top of the show, this episode represents the shift in contemporary Star Trek that I dislike. A type of humor that is conceptually on par with older forms of Trek, but its intelligence and sophistication are removed in favor of juvenile humor that is very popular right now. This type of juvenile humor, it's meant to appeal to the lowest common denominator. Now, I don't want to sit here and pretend that in Trek 60 years, there were never lowbrow efforts. There were. That would be untrue if I were to say otherwise. But they were the exception. The difference, though, was that most of the dominant comedic mode, I guess, that was built into these episodes, it was genre parody, literary allusion, historical collision, social satire, philosophical paradox, theatrical farce, or characters taking an absurd situation completely seriously. Those are usually the comedic modes that were utilized for earlier Star Trek. And what I mean specifically is that the joke frequently depends on knowing something outside of Star Trek, not just hijinks situations. It required knowledge, even when there was slapstick, the episode often had another intellectual structure underneath it. For example, New Trek, this will be a perfect way to encapsulate exactly what I mean. New Trek, dude, where's my car? Older Trek, Shakespeare, Sherlock Holmes, Robin Hood, Leonardo da Vinci, James Bond, pulp serials, the American Civil War, and the Magnificent Seven. There were references to sophisticated art forms, philosophical art forms. Now yes. We have Dude, Where's My Car? Now it may look like I'm jumping the gun. Like, well, Michael, this is one episode. That's not entirely true. You look back at most of the comedic episodes in this new era of Star Trek, they usually divulge into this type of humor. And yes, that goes to my problem that I've always had, my love-hate relationship that I have with Lower Decks. I like Lower Decks. I think it's a smart show, but oftentimes those episodes veer into juvenile stupidity that really doesn't have any real intelligence. The first couple seasons predominantly were guided or governed under intelligence. If you remember, David, this final season and a half, what did I say? Like, they've kind of given up on finding some more narrative.
They ran out of steam.
Yeah. So that's my problem with an episode like this. And this could be less a Star Trek leadership problem, so I don't want to start casting stones. And it could be more of a cultural problem. You know, I think the difference isn't that.
I think you're onto something there, because, like, when you mention it, it's not a leadership problem. But it might be a cultural problem, because, like, when you think about, like, the types of humor that's actually really prevalent today, you know, people point out Rick and Morty and basically focus on Rick and Morty as the juvenile, over the top, barf out your guts type of humor. But the beauties of Rick and Morty was the fact that they took that humor and blended it with something sophisticated.
Yeah.
Something that had meaning behind it. You know, you had those really in-depth moments with some of the fans of Rick and Morty where they would be seeing, they're not talking about the jokes. They're talking about like how Rick is going to tried to commit suicide throughout the entire thing.
Yes.
And how that's a tragic story.
Right. The joke, David, is only the mode of transport. It isn't what the point
is.
Yes. So you just hit on exactly what I was talking about. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that you're onto something there because like, it's kind of like, I could understand that if you have certain writers in that writing room that come from that particular generation, that culture, that is how they're going to write. If you brought in like a veteran, he's not going to write something like this. He's just not. You can't see like writers of DS9. Yeah, Ronald D. Moore.
He isn't writing an episode like this. He's not.
Can you imagine Ronald D. Moore being given this and basically saying, "Hey, can you make a comedy of this?" And Ronald D. Moore is going to like look at the lead writer or lead editor, cripple it up and throw it in his face or something.
Right. David, and I think we need to distinguish. Or at least, yeah, we need to distinguish exactly what we're talking about. So when I said mode of comedy is just the way to transport what you're actually trying to say, look at Mel Brooks movies. Mel Brooks movies are largely slapstick stupidity, superficially. That's not what he's trying to. He's not trying to tell you jokes just for joke's sake. There's usually a cultural reason behind his jokes. He's saying something about society, about socio-political aspects. There's something important he's saying, and his mode of communicating that is the funny, is the comedy. And that is what Star Trek did as well for many years. Again, generalizing here. I'm not saying absolute, but generally speaking, that is what old Star Trek, for the most part, attempted to do with their silly comedic or gimmick episodes. Whereas, again, looking at Best Friends, the Strange New Worlds episode, there really isn't any of that there. There isn't any warning to La'an's issues. There's nothing there really about Pike's fate. There's nothing about Una and the fact that she genetically augmented being. Like, there's nothing about our characters that's being said with the funny. It's simply there to be funny and remedy a relationship between Ortegas and Scott that wasn't there before. That's the other thing. So in order to get to this funny episode, they had to create this fake problem between the two of them. And when I say fake, it's never been there before. They produced it this season simply so they can tackle it in this episode, which is the hallmark of bad writing.
Yes.
That is the hallmark of bad writing. If this episode had come maybe around episode 7 or episode 6, that aspect would have been relegated. It would have been far less of an issue because then you had this problem throughout the season where Scott and Ortegas are not getting along. It's creating issues. And then not suddenly, around 7 or 8, the 7th or 8th episode, they then acknowledge that problem and then they fix it through an episode similar to this. But to introduce this
to a head.
Correct. To introduce it this soon and then resolve it, that's not foresight. That's actually lack of foresight. Bringing it back to the specific the specifics of culture, because again, David, just to be fair, which is what we like to do on the show, I don't want to put all the blame on the shoulders of the writers necessarily. Yes, it is their fault for an episode like this, but we have to remember that writers can only write based on the conditions that they live within. And that means there are cultural issues that are always going to constrain particular styles of writing and or allow other forms of writing. And currently, I think that's really the biggest difference between older Star Trek and new Star Trek. Older Star Trek never used juvenile humor in this way. It's probably more that it's, I would say, the way they used humor in the older days of Star Trek, it's probably more that it's comedy is very often assumes that you have a culturally literate audience. So in older forms of Star Trek, David, when they would use literary references, philosophical subtext, you know, people in the audience would pick up on it because they were more of an illiterate audience. We aren't as literate as a culture as we used to, which means the writers themselves may not be as literate or as well-read, which also means, let's say they are well-read. Well, you have studio heads saying, well, the consensus of the time is that these people don't know any of these things, so we need to remove these things. So what we're left with is juvenile comedy that is less intelligent and more like, dude, where's my car?
Exactly. And that ultimately, I agree with you. It's not a it's not saying anything bad about the writers of this particular episode. It's just basically the situation that they're put in is what is the issue that we probably both have with this. Is when I look at Catherine Lynn's work and everything, her work as a writer basically goes back not that far back. And one of the things that I just I found out was, like, she's one of the main writers in Star Trek Lower Decks. So it makes sense why afterwards I looked at this episode and go, oh yeah, it's like watching a Lower Decks episode.
Yeah.
Well, because the writer of this particular episode themselves comes from that type of what I call, I think I called it, when we were covering Lower Decks, the type of comedy that you're looking at Lower Decks is like chaotic comedy. Shit happens, it gets thrown at you just randomly. And at the very end, they wrap it up and try to be clever with it. Like, all the humor is supposed to actually mean something in the very end, at this one minute moment at the very end. It's a very, it's something that I've noticed in a lot of writing for comedic shows and even like sci-fi shows recently, the last 5 years, where it's like, we're going to throw a ton of stuff at you and expect you at the very last minute, sometimes 5 minutes at the 5 minute mark toward the ending, suddenly everything makes sense.
Yeah.
And because they throw in like this MacGuffin at the last moment. And it really struck me the second time I watched the episode, when the whole thing gets solved because Ortegas had the key in her cast the whole time.
Yeah.
and it's kind of like those type of MacGuffins in that type of comedy is what I call chaotic comedy.
It also, David, it just logically speaking, and I don't want to nitpick because now this is going to turn into nitpicking, but even logically speaking, a planet like this would never be allowed to exist. It's just, it's illogical.
You make it sound like you would destroy it right away.
No, it just, listen, come on. I know how to have fun, David. Don't try to say I'm boring, okay? Like, I know how to have fun.
No. Because, like, I was about to say, a planet like this is dangerous, Mike. Because, like, if you're on it and you're inebriated, oh, everything, you're not safe anymore.
Obviously, there's no checks and balances. You're supposed to be protected by these people, you know? Like, that was the whole idea. It was almost set up like, you know how we have that trend now where people go to, was it Paraguay, to go do ayahuasca? And it's very, like, clinical now. It's not like you go into the jungle and try ayahuasca. It is given to you by a support group. They're there to make sure you experience a safe journey. They're not leaving you alone, because if they do, the chances of you killing yourself or killing someone else goes exponentially higher. So to have a planet like this is just an illogical fallacy, because imagine the liability of people dying, killing each other, raping each other. I'm like, if everyone's inebriated, no one has the proper mindset. If the gas itself comes from the planet, that means you would have to wear a mask of some type to make sure you're not inebriated. And as far as I can tell, everybody that was in charge was not wearing a mask.
And especially when you throw in the fact that you started the series with the whole fact that La'an is having issues with being more aggressive. And you throw her into... I was expecting La'an to murder someone on this planet.
Yeah, so lastly then, when it comes to the negatives, when they use words like vibe and best self...
Yes, it is. That is like a weird tick of mine nowadays.
I don't like it. It breaks the immersion. There are stylistic distinctions in New Trek that pull viewers out. We talked about this during our coverage for Starfleet Academy, which is probably the biggest perpetrator of such a thing. It doesn't mean it hasn't popped up in a Strange New Worlds prior to now. It has. This is probably one of the ongoing problems I have with everything after Discovery. Discovery didn't bleed into these things. For all the shit Discovery gets, it didn't bleed into these trendy stylistic designs. It wasn't trying to look for memeable memes. You know, that's the good thing about Strange New Worlds. It was kind of operating in a vacuum in some degree. Later, it started reacting to fans as social media continued to grow. But for the most part, it didn't have these issues. And when you have things like vibe, best self, dude, where's your car type of humor, what I start to see, because I know how things are done in writing rooms and in studios, this feels like they're just trying to connect with a hip, air quote, hip audience, you know, people who are younger. But this is not what they're doing. In fact, when young people, you know, my son says this all the time, he's 18. When older people try, or movies try, to use words like this in order to appeal to the younger demo, it looks suspicious and it looks cheesy to the younger generation. It actually has the opposite effect. So again, you have a TV show trying to play to an audience that doesn't exist. This was the problem with Starfleet Academy. Well, we're playing to a different audience. What audience, bro? No one's watching it. We are the audience. Star Trek fans are the audience. I understand you need to reach for that other demo. I have no problems with that. Deep Space Nine did that. Voyager did that. Enterprise did that. But at the same time, they also try to adhere to the normal rules that would also maintain the core Star Trek fan base. So These types of words, the dialogue just sounds like language that does not organically belong in this universe. Now, the original series, David, just to be fair again, had some of these problems. Let's not pretend it didn't. But after the original series came to an end, Star Trek became more neutral. The movies, as well as TNG onward, there was an intentional shift toward a more relatively neutral, formal, and temporally unanchored style. Something that would hold and stand the test of time. When you start throwing in lots of colloquialisms and slang, what happens is you date your show. And usually those types of shows do not date very well. So there's two reasons why you don't want to do it. Number one, for a practical reason, it dates your show needlessly. And two, it doesn't fit in the world of Star Trek. It's just like Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. The worst scene in the entire movie, the worst aspect, is when he dusts his shoulders off like he's fucking Jay-Z. You know, that is just nonsense.
It breaks the immersion of the viewer or the fan at that point, because you start questioning and you start saying, that's not how that character would react. You know, that's the biggest thing that basically we would say about that Luke Skywalker scene is like, Luke would not actually be brushing his shoulder and basically acting all cocky. No, that's not Luke.
And also that's Mark Hamill. That is an urban gesture. That's something from rap music.
Yeah. And then like when it goes to Star Trek, when you're using colloquialisms like what you would expect in today's world, that doesn't work in Star Trek, because the one thing that I like you brought up is the fact that Star Trek has always been based on neutrality. It's basically like you're not supposed to actually see, you know, Star Trek as today's world. We're supposed to see Star Trek in a different light.
And you're talking aesthetically. That's why, like, you're talking aesthetically. Yes, it's neutral. Yes.
Aesthetically. That's what makes like Star Trek I forgot the one with the whales.
Oh, come on. The Voyage Home?
Yeah, the Voyage Home. That's what made Voyage Home special, because like that was the one time that Star Trek basically said, okay, this is what happens when the Star Trek gets put into present day.
And David, thank you.
We see why it doesn't fit.
That's exactly right. The reason why Voyage Home was so funny was because they were using words that they're unfamiliar with. So when Spock says they like you very much, but they are not the hell your whales, that's funny because he doesn't understand the word. That's it. And not because he's Vulcan either. Kirk does the same thing throughout the movie. They don't understand the colloquialisms nor the slang. That's the humor of it. But now, suddenly in Strange New Worlds, they understand all these colloquialisms and slang specific verbiage. I really wish they would stop doing these types of things. And this may feel like nitpicking, David, and that's not my point. This is about franchise clutter. Okay. When you have a franchise going on 60 years, you have to be careful with these types of things because you start to make it messy. It doesn't belong in Star Trek, and it really needs to stop. There's plenty of things you can do with humor that doesn't mean you bleed into the real world.
Exactly.
And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. As I did say, though, David, the strength of the episode is, in fact, just to clarify here, because there are some strengths, it is the Spock and Kirk aspects. Ultimately, is what saves it for me. If that wasn't there and it didn't turn out that Kirk was actually literally there and he wasn't a hallucination, I think I probably would have walked away incredibly disappointed with this episode. Now, David, the reason why I'm so passionate about this, this is something that you and I talk about a lot. The reason why I'm so passionate about these types of things is because, Dave, we only have 10 episodes a season. And that's why if we weren't given the Kirk and Spock stuff, I would have walked away upset, because you're asking me to now expect 6 episodes. How many episodes would it be? 7 episodes to carry the weight of an entire season now. And it turns out there are 2 more gimmick episodes after this. So now I'm starting to get a little frustrated because
a little nervous here.
Yeah. And I haven't watched those episodes yet purposely. I know we're behind a bit, but I like to tackle each episode on its own. But ultimately, like I said, if it wasn't for the Kirk and Spock stuff, I don't think this episode would have much to offer. I really don't. I don't even think the humor was that funny. It's all like relatively low hanging fruit. Tattoos, karaoke.
Scotty in a Magoota costume.
Yeah.
That was weird enough.
Is not even like inventive or like super clever. It's obvious. And that goes back to what I said about Dude, Where's My Car? It's obvious humor. It isn't well thought out humor that requires a knowledge outside of the situation you're trying to create, as well as knowledge outside of Star Trek. So in the future, David, I hope, you know, again, there's not much that can be changed at this point. We know all of the episodes are in the can at this point. But I do hope moving forward that we focus more on those moments like we had with Kirk and Spock in this episode. Let's focus on fleshing out those last minute aspects to these characters that end up being lasting legacy fixtures within the world of Star Trek.
Yeah, I think the problem that this episode really, really like walks a thin line about is you can literally make this episode a forgettable episode. Like, I even see online people basically saying, oh, this is like a forgettable episode. But in actuality, the thing that saves it that I keep telling people, no, this is an important episode because you guys are focusing on story A, which was Scotty and Ortegas. The real focus should be on story B, which is Spock and Kirk.
It's the only significant part.
It's the only significant part, but it's a really important part, especially for the character growth of those two characters. And it's a very, this is a trope that I saw a lot in Lower Decks, where you have story A over here. This is the main story of this show. But in actuality, our message is in story B. And it'd be used as kind of like a quote unquote clever writing trope for the show, because that's how you know Rick and Morty does it. That's how I'm trying to remember how the other show that the showrunner did that I really liked. It's Solar Opposites.
Yeah,
I think it's Solar Opposites. But like those type of shows and that type of writing, it's you have to look into deeper into the story and what's going on in the background than what's in the foreground. And in some shows that works. In here, I could see why people, like especially Star Trek fans, kind of get thrown off by it, because that's not quote unquote Star Trek storytelling. You know, you have a main focus, which should be story A. If they actually flipped this and said, okay, the whole dude, where's my car thing, if story B was the main focus, I think that basically the episode would be
yes,
better received and not actually be not be talked about as a forgettable episode.
No, you're right. It should have been, you're absolutely right. Story A should have been Spock and Kirk, and story B should have been Ortegas and Scott.
And Scotty. Yeah.
It writes itself. Why would you choose, unless, you know, I know each character needs to get their due. That's the nature of this type of Star Trek. So in that regard, you probably need to have an episode centered around Scotty and Ortegas, but again, I feel like ultimately the episode would have stood the test of time and would have been remembered more favorably if it was in fact shaped around Kirk and Spock more specifically.
Instead of, you know, like, oh, let's try to be clever about it.
I will say I did like, and this is something that Strange New Worlds keeps doing, and I do like that when it comes to Spock's mind melding. I do like that they remind us, even though they used it to be funny, you know, that he mind melded with a plant, and it may seem like complete farce. But if you look at the history of Spock and just the Vulcan species, we've seen these types of things, and we have seemed to forgotten that. Is that how you say that? We seem to forget. There we go. We seem to forget that mind melding is not something that just is between humanoid and humanoid. We saw in the very first movie, from millions and millions of miles away, and yet Spock was able to sense V'ger, and then once he confronts V'ger, what does he do? He mind melts with V'ger. So this isn't something new, and I can go on and on. There are tons of examples like that. So to see him mind meld with a plant, I thought that was clever. It was one of the more funny aspects that you could say are silly.
Yeah.
That also, though, fits with what we know of Star Trek. And that's why ultimately it works. And even the joke about the cactus, it all works because that's a theme that was used when writing the Kirk and Spock aspect. So it's very consistent as well as making sense in terms of canon. So again, David, the story B stuff is pretty tight. It's story A,
that's the thing,
where everything for me gets lost in just superficialities and unnecessary, you know, things. So,
oh yeah.
All right. So David, I'm not quite sure how to rate this episode. I'm really trying to be objective about it because I do not feel like it's a bad episode. I don't feel like it's a bad episode, but I do feel like, and this is why I need to be fair, because my rating right now also is based on the fact that there's 10 episodes. So it's not just the normal things, factors that we throw into the equation when we try to figure out our score here. This is a problem we've had with Strange New Worlds now since the second season. At times, the series gets lost in its own desire to be memeable, to connect with an audience that doesn't exist, to do these silly jokes in a 10-episode season that Star Trek, older Star Trek, would have done, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. But the difference is, once again, they had 20-plus episodes per season to have two or three episodes where they would do the comedy. Whereas Strange New Worlds seemingly is doing 2 to 3 silly episodes a season, and they only have 10 episodes. So that being said, with everything that I have critically gone through, I'm going to give this episode a 77%.
I'm a little bit more lenient on you than you on this episode, just because I really did enjoy the Spock and Kirk aspects of this episode a lot. Like, especially when you get to the punchline, I thought the punchline for story B was Kirk actually being there. Like, he was actually there. So that that whole, when that happened, I basically said, oh, story B is used to actually explain the beginnings of this weird relationship that Kirk and Spock always had. Why they're best friends since day one of, like, the original series. While when you, like, when you brought up, when you hit play, Kirk and Spock are pretty much best friends from the beginning of the show. And it's like, here we finally get to actually understand, oh, this is why. Because Spock, being inebriated, spills his guts out to Kirk, and Kirk, being inebriated, basically takes it all in and basically literally gets to know Spock because of this planet. And it makes sense. It makes sense now why in the original series, they're best friends by the very big get-go. Like, he's his quote-unquote number one. Spock is Kirk's number one, and Kirk is Jim to Spock. And I gave this episode, even though I agree with you, I've really gotten away from liking, like, the chaotic comedy, because to me, chaotic comedy is like a trope for bad writing. It really has been the last 3 years. I've seen so many shows try to copy the Rick and Morty formula of being chaotic and just meaningless in the very end. And it just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. And I'm like going, no, that's just bad writing we're just seeing. So I gave this episode an 80, in my opinion, just because of how important the whole Spock and Kirk aspect was. If that, like what you said earlier, if the Spock and Kirk aspect wasn't there, this would be a bad episode.
Yeah.
It would probably be into the 60s with me.
It probably would have been a 60 or a 50 for me. I just want to leave people with this, Dave. Elementary, Dear Data, was about questions of consciousness. Cupid, TNG, was about medieval romantic literature. Deja Q was about the human condition. And I can go on and on. Deep Space Nine goes into really interesting territories culturally. There was meaning behind all of the silliness. There is no meaning behind being inebriated and singing karaoke while getting tattoos on your fucking face. It's just stupidity. It's clown behavior. That's it.
Yes.
So, all right, that brings us to the end. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.